Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Welcome to today's episode, where we're joined by beauty PR powerhouse, Kelly Marks, co-founder of Pure PR, an agency that's been shaping the beauty landscape for 25 years, sorry, should I say. From growing up immersed in the beauty world, thanks to her entrepreneurial father, who founded one of the UK's first online beauty retailers, to working under PR legend Jenny Halpin, Kelly's journey to launching Pure PR in 1999 has been filled with innovation, passion and drive. Along with her partner, Cara Ward, Kelly has helped put cult brands like Malin & Goetz, Moroccan Oil and e.l.f. Cosmetics on the map. In this episode, we'll dive into Kelly's career, what it takes to stand out in the crowded beauty space, and how her agency has stayed ahead of the curve, championing sustainability and integrity from day one. So if you're a beauty entrepreneur thinking of hiring or switching PRs, this is the episode for you. So thank you so much, Kelly, for being on the podcast. So firstly, why PR and why beauty, and what do you love about them so much?
I don't think it could ever have been anything else. Thank you for the introduction. That was very nice to hear all of that, and strange to hear all in one place, but great. Why PR and why beauty? It had to be beauty. You mentioned that my dad worked in the beauty industry, and so he left school at 14 and became a hairdresser's apprentice. He later went on to have a couple of hair salons in London, and also he launched HQHair.com, which was like the first beauty website really in the UK many, many years ago. And I think once you've got beauty in your blood, there's no going back from there, and particularly within hairdressing. British hairdressing is like the epicenter of global hairdressing as far as I see it. And I've had the pleasure of working with many, many, many hairdressers over the years, from Errol Douglas, Daniel Hirschson, Luke Hirschson, Daniel Galvin Jr., Joe Hansford, Sean Hanna, various others. There's something about the hairdressing which gets the whole family involved. Mm. And I see that with the Hirschersons, I see that with the Galvins, I see that with the Hansfords. They're everyone. It seems like it's a family business. And I think because I was not really involved, but would see that around me growing up, beauty became the thing that I was interested in, but without knowing it.
Yeah.
It was just kind of part of just what I did and what my interest was. I left university actually with a history of art degree, which I'm really, really thankful for, and absolutely love, but knew that art history wasn't something I was going to go into as a career. As luck would have it, I got an internship with Jenny Halpin, as you mentioned before, having no idea what PR was. But whilst I was in my university years, I would buy lots of magazines, and I would always see a lip balm, and I loved this lip balm. It came in a wooden casing. Anyway, my first job at Jenny's was to tidy away some products from a client that their contract had ended with, and we needed to tidy up these products, box them up and send them back. And lo and behold, it was this lip balm. And I was like, well, what are you guys doing with this lip balm? What is this? And they said, oh, well, they're one of our clients. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, what do you even do? And they explained to me how PR worked. And I realized that every single magazine I'd been reading that had this very same lip balm in, they had been the PR that got it in those magazines.
Oh my gosh. What brand was it? Brand was the lip balm?
It was Kiss My Face, and they used to do these fruity lip balms in like a wooden container that there were two colors, like blue on the top, yellow on the bottom, or green and red, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I could never buy it because I never found it in a shop.
Mm.
And that was obviously before internet days. It wasn't like, oh, log on to www, whoever, and buy it. And basically they had really limited distribution. And because they had limited distribution, even though they had incredible press coverage, the two things didn't work hand in hand. So you can have incredible press coverage, but unless you have stockists available for people to go and buy the product, You can't buy it. So that was a learning. So I think that was why I was beauty. I felt like beauty was always in my blood. And then when I found out what PR was, I was like, this is actual magic, like how this all happens. And I think it's about the connection and the putting the editor with the brand and bringing that all together. And that's the thing I still love madly about my job, is bringing people together. So I think that's why, in a very long-winded response,
It
a
all
very
starts with
specific
magazines, doesn't
question.
it? Like, I was obsessed with magazines as well and beauty products. And I think, yeah, doing what we do, it sort of comes full circle, doesn't it? In
Yeah,
that sense.
completely.
And I'm going to ask you something that you probably get really fed up of hearing when potential clients pose it to you. But when people say, kind of, what is the value of PR as opposed to other kinds of marketing, especially now that we have online and magazines don't have the kind of clout that they used to back in the day, as in they were our sole source of information when it comes to beauty products.
I'd say what PR gives you that other elements of marketing don't give you is honesty. Because if you're just looking, let's say, at an out-of-house campaign, you're looking at an advert on a bus, or you're looking at an advert on TV, or whatever it happens to be, there's no opinion to that. It's just the brand saying, this is who we are, this is what we do, and you should go and get it. But what PR does is it gives you the editor or the influencer's perspective. So every piece of coverage we're going to get is not necessarily going to be singing the praises of the product. The product has to stand on its own 2 feet and be good enough that the brand and we recognize it as good enough to suitable enough to get the positive feedback. But that's what you get with PR. It's much more consumer friendly because it is giving opinion, it's more personal, and you're putting the trust of the person that's giving that review. So whether it's an influencer talking about something that they've tried, or it's an editor giving a review, it's their opinion, it's not the brand's opinion. And a brand has to be really, 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 really good to put themselves in that position and have the faith in their conviction and their formulas and everything to be able to say, right, everyone who we're going to send this to is going to love it.
Definitely. So I imagine you have to be very selective when it comes to who you decide to take on board. And imagine there are any like times where you'd be like, yeah, I don't think this is in the right stage yet for it to kind of go out to press and
And
people.
sometimes we will say to people, we will say to people that we can't work with them because they're not ready. Sometimes we can't work with people because they're unrealistic about their expectations of what PR can do, or they don't have enough budget to make it make sense, in the bigger scheme of things.
And also people talk about PR as if it's just press, but it's also other it's other people as well, isn't it? It's beauty buyers, it's investors. I mean, PR can kind of tick so many boxes when it comes to the
Yeah,
success of
and
a
you're
brand.
completely right. I think it used to be about getting press, right? And if you got on the radio, it was a bonus, or if you got TV, it was a bonus. Now it's, of course, it's all of that. It's the huge, influencer space as well. Beyond that, it's celebrities, key opinion formers, buyers, industry, trade, it's everything. So I feel like our role as PR has become even more important to brands, but only sometimes the brands are willing to see that as kind of like you're out of scope and don't take that for granted, if that makes sense.
And obviously you guys are beauty specialists. What are the kind of main benefits of that as opposed to going with a sort of more like general PR firm where they have like lots of different accounts? Because you'd be surprised when I've worked with brands in the past and they've just gone to a PR firm that represents all sorts as opposed to just focusing on beauty.
Yeah, I think the benefits of for a beauty brand to specifically select a beauty PR, it comes down to contacts, right? So if you were a beauty company and you just went to a general consumer PR company, they might not have such great contacts within the beauty space. And of course, we always say to our clients, like, the beauty coverage is the bread and butter. That's what you expect us to have. So we can have, Jess Dinor at Vogue, or Nadine Bagger, or this one or that one on our speed dial, right? So we can just reach out to them in 3 seconds because we've been working in the industry for over 25 years. We know them really well. It's a really quick and efficient way for a brand to be able to get to these people, is to by working with a specialist. And I think that beauty PRs in that way work really well, but it depends on the beauty, on the business, right? So people don't just find out about beauty through beauty editors or through beauty influencers. And I think it's not even just about the genre. It works more widely than that. So, it's people will have other interests. So, for example, it could be someone who loves a gardening podcast but has dry hands, so they need a hand cream. So it's where are you going to meet your customer? So it's not just in the beauty space. It's great to have that beauty expertise, and I think, as I say, that's the bread and butter, and that's the what everyone should have, and what every beauty PR should deliver. But a better than just a beauty PR is someone who looks beyond those typical places and takes the brand to where the customer is, rather than expecting the customer to come to them just for beauty.
No, and it makes the job more interesting, right? Giving that
Sure.
variation.
And also, I think it's like a lot more about archetypes. So it's not just people who like beauty. Those people like all sorts of things. And it's not about the demographic and how old they are, but it's what those people are into at whatever age or stage they are in their life.
And what do you look for in an ideal client? Like, what are the main things that kind of make you think, yes, I'm gonna take them on, and it's gonna work with
Okay.
them?
So number one, it's a brand that we on the team would get excited about. It's a brand, and if we're going to get excited about it, I know our contacts, our editors, our influencers are going to get excited about it. So that's the number one thing, that it's a brand that's doing. So what makes it exciting? It's a brand that is doing something different, is doing something really, really well. And above all of that was really important, but it's about that chemistry and that personalities with the people. Can I see myself speaking to these people 3 or 4 times a week? Do I want to help? Are they good, nice and good people that I want to help grow their business for them? Do they have the right values and the right morals, right? And are they willing to put their trust in us? Because I think sometimes with companies, they want a PR, but they just want to tell the PR what to do, rather than asking for that consultation. And really, for me, and I know the team at Pure, we love coming up with ideas. So we love to be able to turn around to brands and say, this is what you should be doing. Put your faith in us, put your trust in us, and let's build a great working relationship. And those are the relationships that work. And honestly, we've worked with the majority of our brands. We work with for a very, very long time. We've worked, Malin and Getz, we've worked with for over 15 years. And that's because
Incredible.
we have that amazing trust relationship, but also camaraderie. And we love their brand as much as it's our own.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing brand, but it's you can just see when I go to like the events that you've done with them, there is that kind of natural chem that natural relationship that you do genuinely get on with each other, and it's clear
Yeah.
that your team are just so passionate about
Yeah. And I think we
that
get
work.
feedback sometimes from brands that ask us to pitch, and they're like, I can't believe how much effort you put into that pitch. And I think that everyone, for me, that's just a given. Like, I can't present an idea to someone that we've presented 100 times to different people. Like, it just doesn't work like that. It's about getting deep under the brand. And the brand letting you do that, really giving you the opportunity to do that, and then putting their trust in you. So it's a great brand, and it's trust, and it's sort of all of that coming together, and the personalities, knowing that you can deal work with these people and get on really well.
100%. I think that often gets overlooked. I saw something on LinkedIn the other day, literally, where they said, "Don't pursue a good role, pursue good people." And I think
Oh,
it's so
that's
true,
so true.
because I think the people make the kind of the project or the role what it is, as opposed to the actual.
100%. And I see that when we're recruiting staff as well. So they may have a certain level of experience or what have you, or they might have experience in a different field. But more than anything, someone who's going to come in and get on well with the team and be like that can-do, enthusiastic, get on with attitude, who loves doing their work. And
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
important, really, than what they've done before.
Definitely. And in something like PR, where you are kind of relying so heavily on your kind of people skills and your communication, that is kind of paramount that you are, a somebody who can get along with people and
Yeah, exactly.
And you mentioned about them having kind of them being different, like your ideal client, like having something new to say. Why is kind of, can you sort of elaborate more on why a brand story is so important and what is kind of your idea of that, of a strong story?
Yeah, sure. There are brands launch every day. There's
Yeah,
hundreds, you know,
such
there's
a saturated market, right?
tens of thousands of brands out there. And if you're just doing something that a million other people are doing, well, that's fine, but what makes you different? So I always say you don't have to be the first person to do something, but you have to be the best in order to get the cut through. And I think a lot of people, you hear all the time these stories, and like, and I know from speaking to you, speaking to various editors over the years, the amount of launches people go to, and they're like, "Oh, well, I couldn't find a product that did this, that, and the other, so I decided to make it my kitchen table." That's just not a story people want to hear,
No.
because
Look.
pretty much everything exists. Okay, it might be a slightly different formulation, or your packaging might be a bit different, or the da, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
You have to be realistic, and you have to look. I know people fall in and fall in love with their ideas, and that's so exciting, but they have to be mindful of what else is out there and what the competition is doing. Say, how am I really different? Who am I really for? And how am I going to set a fire in their belly to make them want to buy my product?
100%, because you get a lot of people maybe think they have a great product and that's it. They don't really need to, that can speak for itself, but it can't. It's because
So,
especially with online, people can't try before they buy. So you're having to sell it, sell them this story in order to get
yeah.
them to pay money for it.
Thing is that I think that the industry's changed a lot. It's not just good enough to have a great product. It's the whole brand story has got to be authentic, inspirational, different, something that people buy into. So there's like that emotive purchase power. People don't just buy it because it's good. They buy it because they feel that that brand represents who they are. They buy it because by having that particular, whether it's a Malin & Goetz hand soap or it's a Elf mascara, like what does that say about them when people can see that they've got those products? It's not just, oh, she's got a great mascara. It's like, oh, she bought that one because she's someone who likes great quality products at brilliant value. So now I understand who that person is.
Yeah, you're buying a piece of that lifestyle, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
And when it comes to kind of tone of voice, I mean, you've mentioned when we've spoken in the past about how, clients, they just sort of seem to overlook it a lot of the time. Or like, they can have amazing, an amazing range, but their messaging and their copy is just really, it really falls short. I mean, why do you think people tend to kind of overlook it when it's something that's so important?
I think people get an idea of their head. They want, let's say they want to create, let's say it's a nail varnish brand, because for whatever reason, it's going to be that their nail varnish brand is going to be different from anyone else. Launching any product, whether it's beauty or otherwise, or brand, is a massive, massive undertaking, emotionally, commercially, everything. And so they've got the idea and then they've done it and then they can't wait to get it out to market. That's why what you guys are doing at Smart Beauty Creative is so important, because you're saying to these people, great, you've got the product, but what's like, where's the heart and soul? What is the heart and soul behind the product? What is the story? And the fact that you can like get these people at that point before they've gone to market and say to them, wait, 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 hold on a second. Great nail varnish. It leaves my nails shiny. It dries really quick and it treats them. And it's got all nice seasonal colors and all the rest of it, and it smells like strawberries. Great. Why have we done it? What's the story? Who are we trying to get to? How can we visually put this together? And how can we like audibly put this together? I think people need to think about like the effect that brand is having on other people from how they see it, from their senses, how they see it, how it feels, what it sounds like, how it tastes. All those elements are really important. And that's really the secret sauce that you and your team are doing to put into brands to make sure they don't just stick another product on a shelf and think someone's going to come and buy it.
No, for sure. Because people are like, well, I can just write the story myself. But when you're sort of, when it's your brand and you're too close to it,
Yeah.
it's, it's really tricky. I mean, I found it even with doing like the copy for my website. It was just like trying to put yourself through your own process is extremely difficult.
Yes.
So it's always good to have somebody, especially with, background like yours, for example, with PR or editorial like mine, that can actually see it from that perspective and understand.
We are the absolute worst people to PR ourselves. We literally, we don't do it. We can't do it. We just don't even think about it.
That's the problem, isn't it? When it comes to kind of in terms of like timelines, what would you say is kind of the average? Because I think that's the biggest thing I hear about brands that I've spoken to. They're like, oh, well, we did hired this PR, but it took too long to get coverage. And it's very tricky because with PR, there isn't that kind of immediate instant gratification that you would get with sort of affiliate links or something like that, where you can immediately see the results. So what would you kind of say is the average kind of timeline?
I would
What
say you,
would be a return on the investment?
I mean, realistically, if you're going to invest in PR, you've got to give it. I mean, I think you've got to give it a year to be realistic. You're not really likely to see anything coming out in the first sort of, well, maybe you'll start seeing like online bits and things like that within the first 3 to 4 months. But you see, it's all accumulative. So one piece isn't necessarily, depending where that one piece is, okay? But like, it takes time. So it takes time for the team, you know, to do the training, to get the language, to press release. There's a lot that happens before we're in a position to be able to present it to press or to influencers. Sometimes, you know, you can get quicker things a bit sooner than that. But realistically, 3 to 4 months, I would say, is an absolute minimum to getting anything. But then you can't stop there because you can't just have one hit and think you've done it.
No, and I get that kind of cash is king, and that a lot of these small brands, they are relying on sales in the early days to kind of keep them afloat. But I feel like people can be very short-sighted when it comes to PR, because it is obviously building brand awareness and ensuring that success in the long term, as opposed to just being this kind of overnight success and burning out. Would you agree with that?
I would say it is definitely long term, and I think the longer. I think editors never really like it when brands move PR a lot because it kind of doesn't reflect that well on the brand, but that, and then at the same time, you know, you've just got a team who are involved and are getting started, and then it moves on. So I think it, you know, it's about putting the right team on it as well. And I think that's what we're very lucky at Pure, that we've got a brilliant team that's kind of across all demographics, really. So depending on the brand, we've got a Gen Z team that can work on it, or we've got a 40 plus team that can work on it. And I think that makes a difference as well. So when you're choosing a PR comp, choosing to work with a PR, you've got to give it a decent amount of time so that it works. You've got to work with an agency or a freelance, what have you, that you know that you're going to get on with. And yeah, you've got to. You can't, it's not just a case of they get on with it and within 3 weeks you've got load of coverage. It just doesn't work like that.
No,
Everything takes time.
exactly. But in the long term, it is going to ensure that your brand can survive in such a crowded, crazy market, because you've sort of
Yes.
done all that groundwork.
Right. And that consistency is so important. So, you know, some companies are like, oh, well, I'll do a little 3 month push here and then I'll do another 3 month push before Christmas. Doesn't really work. People forget so quickly about what's
Yeah,
out there.
for sure. And
And you
also,
know what it's like, the amount, you know, as a beauty writer, the amount of products that you're going to get emailed and sent and everything else. How's anyone supposed to, you know, if you don't keep finding out about it, you're not
100%.
going to get it.
And I'm not even like one of the kind of big shot beauty editors. I mean, goodness knows how much stuff those
Right.
must get. And it's just
Huge
crazy.
amount.
Even like, as a freelancer, you get sent so much. And I was saying this to a few journalist friends that I met with the other day about how sometimes brands think if they can just put a load of money behind something, that's it. They don't really need to kind of tell you the story or sort of win you over. It's like, well, I've taken you out for breakfast, so what more do you want? What more do you want? Or I've given you these lovely products, which is very nice. I'm not complaining, but also it's like, well, I need to tell my readers why they should spend their money on this. And a lot of the time they don't really have an answer, which is incredible. But from your perspective, what are the kind of most unrealistic expectations that clients have had where it comes to PR?
I think clients think that we can send one thing to one person and they're going to drop everything and write about their product right then and there. They think that it's really easy and it really isn't. I think that because we know You've got the contacts. Those contacts are, they're going to listen to us and they're whatever. But if they're not interested in the product or it doesn't fit with what they're working at, they're not going to necessarily feature it, what have you. So that's, I think, it's the biggest misconception that they think, like some clients will turn around and say, right, well, we can send to this many people, or send that to many people. And some clients will be like, well, we've got three that you can send out. And you're like, right, well, three's really not going to cut it, because
No.
it's really, it's a probability game at the end of the day.
That's the thing. Do you think sort of like brands sometimes see you as an afterthought when when they're kind of divvying up their marketing budgets and things like that? It's
I
like,
think
well.
often, I think what I think is happening is a change in tides, is that brands are recognizing that PR should not be sort of the, that, oh, I've got a little bit of extra budget, let's put that to PR. I think they are recognizing the value of it, and attributing budget accordingly. I think, yes, it used to be that they'd think, oh, I've got an extra couple of grand a month, I'll put that to PR and see what I can get. But they're now, I think, starting to prioritize it in a way that, and recognize its value. Because going back to what you asked before, they're seeing that value of that impartial coverage, that coverage that's, down someone else's opinions, whatever else, and seeing how valuable that is. And there's, you can get a piece of coverage and it can generate tens or hundreds or thousands of pounds of sales, but yet that agency is just on, a small retainer that doesn't change whatever. But it can really make a huge difference to the company's bottom line if you're getting that right coverage for them. And you
No,
see that
exactly.
directly through sales, and then also through affiliates and things like that as well. I love it when our clients share their affiliate updates with us so that we can see which coverage is generating sales for them. And that's what we're really about at Pure, is like that commercially driven coverage. We know the clients, we don't take for granted the fact that clients are spending however much money with us to promote their work. It's only their to generate more sales for them. So that's what we aim to do.
Exactly. And you mentioned earlier about it being a relationship, and obviously it's a two-way street, so you can sort of, do the best you can, but if the client isn't playing ball and kind of pulling, like pulling up their end, then I guess it's really tricky. I mean, what are the best ways that you think a client can work with you as a PR? Because I find as a journalist sometimes I'll get a quote back and it'll be this really kind of near kind of quote from a brand founder, and I'll say to the PR, like, can you not get more, can they not kind of be a bit more interesting and just like say something a bit more reader friendly, and so just things like that. I feel like sort of brands can work with
It's
PRs in a
that
different way.
trust piece. It's them trusting that we're going to put them forward in the best possible way. Sometimes a client will be like, right, now you're going to just say this, 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 this. But we know that's not going to land. So we have to do it in a way that the journalist wants it, but at the same time, getting the correct messages across for the client. So I think the client has to trust the PR, has to let them do what they know to be best in their area, if whatever country or whatever area they operate in, because of course it's different in Germany or in the UK or in the US or Australia, South Africa, whatever.
Yeah,
That's
of course. Yeah.
different, those different local nuances. So I think that's important, especially for international brands, to work with agencies who specialize in the different countries that they're growing in. And they have to provide what we need when we need it, if we are able, in order for us to generate what they need when they need it. So we need imagery, we need video content, we need prices, we need stockist information, we need all these things. And if they're not ready with it, we're not going to get very far. So we were working with someone a while ago who had launched a beautiful new product, but they had no imagery. Well, budgets have really been reduced everywhere. Most titles, onlines, etc., don't shoot their own product.
No,
So
there's not
it's
the
not
turnaround
cheap.
time when you're
Right.
uploading 10 articles a day. You don't have time to do a photo shoot
Right.
for all of all of the products of
So,
the future.
we need to make sure that the brand has that. If the brand doesn't have that, they're not ready yet to do PR. But you see, I think that piece comes from you telling them you need all these assets in order that anyone's going to be able to feature your product and do all of that.
And imagine flexibility as well, because obviously you get journalists like me asking you for quotes at the 11th hour. So I guess brand founders and their teams need to be very kind of on it in order to give you the information you need within a short kind of time window.
But we'll always, not always, often, if there's a new client or it's a new launch, we will go to the founder or the scientist or the creator, whoever it is, with questions. So we'll put together questions for them that we think people will ask. So if you come to me and you WhatsApp me with a request because you're doing a story and you come to me at 8 o'clock at night, I know I can't get hold of my client then because they're in Australia and they're fast asleep. Or whatever, I know I've got a version of a quote that
Yeah, that's such a
may
good
work
idea.
for your story. So it's about being prepared a lot of the time.
Definitely. And how would a client know if they're kind of sort of researching PRs? Like, how they know which PR is kind of right for them? Would you say it's just somebody who gets them and that gets on with them and kind of
I would say they should look and see where do they want their brand to be. Whether that's on Instagram or whether that's in a particular publication or whether that's on This Morning or wherever they think it's right for it to be. What brand's showing up on the in those channels a lot and who's responsible for that? So if they've seen that there's a lot of stuff, I don't know, on a brand that where they want their brand to be or someone that's that similar market, see who's doing the PR for those brands. And maybe that would be a good place to start and then see how you get on with them. And I think, we just delivered a client report. We had over 450 pieces of coverage in 1 month for that client.
Amazing.
A great PR campaign can really deliver big results. So I think if you're noticing coverage repeatedly for a particular brand that resonates with you and what you're doing, then that would be the agency I think you should start speaking to.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when it comes to kind of the biggest sort of PR mistakes you've seen in your career, what would you say are up there in the kind of top three or five? What are the biggest mistakes people make with PR? And that could be in the way they kind of deal with journalists or just kind of campaigns in general that have perhaps backfired on them.
I've seen brand founders be rude to journalists,
Yeah, I've had that as a journalist.
which
She's
doesn't sit
crazy.
well. It's like you want this person, you're not paying this person to do anything for you. You need to give them a really good story and like a reason to want to write about you. Why are you being rude to them? So that doesn't fly with me. The other thing that doesn't fly with me is when people have come to an event and then the speaker at the event, or let's say it's a celebrity or whatever, keep them waiting. You can't do that either. So it's about that mutual respect, I think, is really important. Treating everyone with respect, treating everyone properly. What other mistakes people make in PR? I think sometimes PRs don't have everything that they need from the client, and their mistake is not pushing back to the client and saying, no, I'm not going ahead with this until we have X, Y, and Z. So I think that can be a mistake. And also brands sometimes being too insular and too pleased with themselves and thinking that everyone's just going to love it, but they're not necessarily. Just that being honest, I think that's important.
Yeah, but imagine that can't be easy if it's your client trying to kind of manage their expectations or.
Oh, I had a cl oh, I'm not saying who, obviously. We had it was in it was during the Zoom days, and we had a new client, and we were doing a Zoom launch,
During lockdown
and
was this?
yeah, during lockdown, and the particular person, someone on the Zoom call hadn't muted their screen, and the client raised their voice quite aggressively and said, "Could you just bloody turn, put yourself on mute? I can't hear myself think." And I was like, "Oh my God, that's so embarrassing."
Oh my gosh. Well,
And
what
I
were
had people, and I had some a couple of editors WhatsApping me privately and being like, "Oh my God, is she a nightmare?" And I'm like, "No. Of course she's not a nightmare.
the Oh my gosh.
It was a lot. Don't do that." I
Yeah,
don't
not
know.
that.
It's about being, everyone just being good, decent people to each other, and not ever thinking that anyone else is that just because you've got a brand doesn't mean you're better than anyone else. Yeah.
No, definitely. You could be more different, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're better. It's just
Yeah.
that. But it's funny, like when I go to like been to events sometimes, and the person speaking will be like somebody from the marketing team, but they are just like dull as dishwater, and everyone is like falling asleep.
Right. Yeah, that's actually a good, that's actually a really good point. And you see it with some international brands, like thinking like everyone's going to drink the Kool-Aid. And what
Yeah.
works in your own organization is great, but sometimes that language doesn't translate outside of your organization.
No.
So that's something that can go wrong a bit as well, I think.
No, I mean, a really good example, I went to this launch for a skincare range, New Nordic, and they brought this herbologist called Jekka. She's a really amazing woman, and she was kind of, she was a natural storyteller, and she was talking about the kind of stories behind like the herbs and all the ingredients, and everyone was just like hanging on her every word. And I think that's how you do it. Rather than using somebody from the internal team, they just brought somebody in that knew how to tell a story, how to kind of,
And I think
hold
that is really important.
an
That's the
audience.
lesson that we talk about internally at Pure as well, is that, and something that we've learned recently, but making sure we're constantly putting it into practice, is that people remember stories more than they remember facts. So tell them things that are interesting. Don't tell them it's got this in it, it's got that in it, it's got the other in it. It's not about that. It's who's this for? Who's this going to work for? Let's tell a story about where someone's had a really good relationship with this brand, or really good of, good results.
Yeah, I remember an editor saying to me, like, it needs to be entertaining first and foremost, and then you inform them. But first of all, it needs to be entertaining. So yeah, it's definitely about getting that right balance, isn't it? And what are the kind of biggest red flags, would you say, when it comes to PR? If somebody's sort of like looking to hire one, what are the sort of the major kind of red flags to look out for?
I think you want to make sure that the people that you're dealing with are enthusiastic about your brand. Not that they, sometimes you think like someone's got a phenomenal portfolio of incredible brands, and so I want my brand to be seen with those brands. But that doesn't mean they're going to do a great job for your brand.
No.
So I think it's actually really feeling that the team that you're speaking to, or the freelancer that you're speaking to, understands who your brand is and where it's coming from and who it's for. And 9 times out of 10, you want someone working on it that's ultimately sort of the customer for your brand as well. You get better
That makes
engagement
complete
that
sense.
way.
There's a lot of kind of small brands I've spoke to said so they can sometimes with the bigger agencies they kind of feel like the runt of the litter sometimes because they don't have the biggest budget. Would you say it's sort of more preferable for them to sort of go with sort of as like freelance PRs in the beginning or like smaller kind of boutique agencies as opposed to trying to kind of play in with play the sort of Premier League kind of thing when it comes to
I think so. I think you need to look at what your budgets are, and the agency need to be used to working with those budgets, because if your budget is half the size of any of the others, it's not that they're gonna, well, they're not gonna have enough to, as much time as maybe you would want them to work on what you're doing, because they've got to put that allocation to other clients as well. So I think, I would love to see like an agency that just specializes in new to market brands. But also I think, sometimes people will come to us and they'll be saying, right, well, our budget, we want you to do this, and our budget is like, not an acceptable budget for that amount of work. So I think they need to be realistic about how much time and effort goes into it. And I think sometimes for smaller brands who maybe haven't got investment, or they haven't got a big marketing spend, or they haven't got advertising and all the rest of it, which oftentimes they don't, and that's fine. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a place for them, because there is.
Yeah, for sure. And I imagine the coverage you're going to get probably won't be the kind of mainstream glossies, or it can be, but
Well,
it's
it
more
can be,
those
because
niche
actually,
titles.
what do editors want? What do you want? You want to hear interesting stories from interesting people. So it's not necessarily, oh, the big senior marketing people from this big company who are based in New York. What would you rather have? An interesting story. Like, we worked for, we did a corporate project for Tatty Lashes, and people loved that story because that was about two. A girl and boy who were best friends who met at school in Liverpool and came from nowhere with four GCSEs between them and have built a multi-million pound business.
I love stories like
That,
that.
and I'm not saying Tatty is a small brand, it is not, it's huge. And they're all like literally, they practically like they're killing it on TikTok, they're killing it everywhere, they're incredible. But like British editors want to write about British brands. So even if you are small or you've just started, if you've got an interesting story and you've got a point of difference and all the rest of it, you are gonna be able to play in that big field. But you've just got to
Yeah.
get the right people representing you.
I'm sure you've had like numerous highlights along your career, but what would you say really stand out for you? Like looking back when you celebrated your 25th anniversary, what were the things that really stood out in your memory?
When I look back over 25 years and think that there's certain people who we were dealing with then that we're still dealing with now, that makes my heart sing, because that's all about relationships. So that's, whether it's like Joe Fairley or it's like Jenny Baden or like people who we've worked with forever. That's amazing. Working with Cara has been a massive highlight, because we've been business partners for 25 years. We haven't had an argument yet. That's ridiculous.
It's still
I'm
time.
waiting for it. It's going to be a whopper. No.
Yeah, all the resentment that's built up over the 25 now.
No, she's just amazing, and we're complete opposites. So it works somehow. Other highlights. We've just done some really cool stuff. We've worked with some incredible celebrities over the years, which is always really fun. We've worked on brilliant shoots. We've come up with campaign ideas that the clients have just said, yes, go for it. We just
Amazing.
got nominated for an award for something that we did, a piece of content that we built for e.l.f. Cosmetics and
Oh
Gemma
my
Collins,
God.
actually. So we're finalists.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So
That's
I'm really pleased
brilliant.
about that. That's a highlight. We did a bunch of fragrance launches over the years for like Kim Kardashian and One Direction, and things like that are always really fun to work with. Other highlights. God, there's so many. It's crazy. All of the events that we do, I think, are definite peaks, because we put so much love and care into it. But also getting good feedback helps. When clients thank you, that should never be taken for granted, because typically people don't thank you for what they're paying you to do. But when they stop and they say, actually, do you know what, that was amazing, or you've done really well, or thanks very much, it's always a massive highlight, because
It
being
doesn't
shown.
take much, but it really kind of makes a difference, doesn't it, in feeling recognized.
Yeah. Also, I'll tell you a massive highlight. When it was our 25th anniversary, which was in March, we brought back all of our Purettes, so anyone that had worked with us over the years. And honestly, that was really emotional for me, like seeing everyone in the room who's worked with us, over 25 years. That was incredible.
Yeah, like Deborah Johnson, my friend, the PR, and she was with you for what, 6, 7 years? And it
I
just
love
goes
that
to show that
woman.
how, well, how much she loved it there working with you, that she was there for that long. And we kind of grew up in the industry together, me and her. And it was, I just remember her being at Pure, and now she's got her own agency, and it's just so lovely to sort of,
Incredible. She's absolutely
she is.
remarkable. We learned so much from Deborah, as much as she, potentially learned from us, just in terms of like getting the job done, and how she gets the job done in the most professional way, and she just takes no BS, and she just gets on with it, and she's completely brilliant. And what she's doing, championing women of color in business, is phenomenal, and it's her calling, and when she told us that she was leaving to do that, we could not have been happier for her. And she's just gone from strength to strength, and she absolutely holds a very special place in our heart.
And what's the future of PR? Do you see PR changing in the next kind of 5, 10, or 25 years?
I would say the future is bright. As I said, there's no end to the opportunities. You know, the whole kind of different platforms of social media and different things and kind of collaborations and putting your brands into unexpected places, all of that, I think is just going to keep continuing and growing. We just did a project with Accrington Stanley Women's Football Club to kind of help to empower and enable that team to develop and grow. And we did that with e.l.f. Cosmetics, and we were able to support them for a football tournament that at their first ever international
Wow.
football tournament. From that work that we did as quote unquote beauty PRs, we were able to help a young lady get a scholarship in American University, which she's just
Amazing.
started and she's doing. So I think PR just keeps growing. It's like as big as your ideas are, to quote Dr. Seuss, just keep biggering and biggering in terms of your ideas and have fun with it, really.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for chatting to me. It's always just brilliant chatting with you. You're so inspiring, and yeah, I feel like I've got like motivation that I didn't have this morning after chatting with you. So and thank you for the smart beauty plug. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, I'm 100% behind everything you're doing, every single step of the way.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.